Welcome to the Maritime Noon Phone-In. I'm Costas Halabrezos. In a month with more than its share of home entertaining, office parties, and once-a-year celebrations, there are choices to be made about wines and even the bubbly. Natalie McLean is here to answer your questions about buying, serving, and enjoying wine. Natalie McLean is the author of Red, White, and Drunk All Over, a book which chronicles her travels and adventures in some of the great wine-producing regions of the world. She also writes a free online newsletter entitled Nat Decants for anyone interested in wine, and there is a link on the Maritime Noon homepage. But right now, Natalie would like to field your questions about choosing wine, either for its own sake or to pair with food. She can also offer advice on serving wines, anything from temperatures to the design of glasses. And by the way, this phone-in is not about making wine at home. It's about the many commercially available varieties from around the world and wineries in this region. So if you have a question related to wine, call now, 1-800-565-1940. That's toll-free to Maritime Noon, 1-800-565-1940. In the Halifax area, 420-9336. I should mention that every day this week and next, one of you who calls in will receive a gift from us, the choice of a book from a list on our website, and from the list of callers who contact Natalie with a question in this hour, we'll pull one name from the hat after today's show, contact you, and you get to pick your own title from those posted on the website. So again, the toll-free number, 1-800-565-1940, in the Halifax area, 420-9336. Natalie, welcome back.
Hi, Costas. How are you?
Great. Now let's start at the end of the month, New Year's Eve.
Right.
Often it's the only time of the year that people will buy champagne or some other kind of sparkling wine. Now, why is it that some of the top champagnes have the word veuve in the title, the French word for widow?
That's a great question, yes. A lot of these champagne houses in France were actually run by women at the turn of the century, either the 19th or the 20th centuries, by women who had either lost their husbands to war or illness. And so they were widows, veuves. So if you think of some of the most famous champagne brands, Veuve Clicquot, Pommery, Bollinger, and so on, those champagne houses were run by those women, and they were in their 20s and 30s. What's fascinating is they were doing this at a time when women weren't in business, and yet here they were running what were France's largest companies and building them into world-class brands.
Hmm. Now, I understand producers in the Champagne region of France have the rights to that name, Champagne, but in fact, how do other similar sparkling wines compare in preparation and in taste?
You're right. Champagne is a trademarked word. So a bubbly or a sparkling wine from any other region in France or around the world cannot be called champagne. So in Spain, they're called cavas. In the New World, North America, in Canada, California, and so on, they're often just called sparkling wine. In Italy, you get Proseccos and Asti Spumante. And for the most part, a lot of these other bubblies are made using the champagne method. So champagne goes through two fermentations. It's the second one in the bottle that gives it the bubbles, and we can go deeper into that if you want. But essentially, they're using the same grapes in the same method as champagne. It's just that the grapes are planted in other regions, and so therefore are labeled differently.
And what grapes do they tend to use?
There's three main grapes that go into sparkling blends, and they tend to be two red ones, a Pinot Noir and a Pinot Meunier, and a white one, Chardonnay. If you get all Chardonnay, it's called a Blanc de Blanc in Champagne. If you get all red grapes in the blend, it's called a Blanc de Noir. But other than that, it's just sort of champagne or sparkling wine.
Now, about the bubbles, that creates a lot of pressure in those champagne bottles.
It does. But
what's the proper way to remove the cork and pour?
Yeah, so ignore those Indy 500 winners who shake the bottle. Very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you want to take out a tree ornament or an eye.
No, let's not this year.
That's right, because you're right. The pressure inside one of those bottles is equal to the pressure inside the tire of a city bus. It's either 6 or 9 atmospheres of pressure. So you want to do this carefully. What I usually do is I put a towel over. First of all, you're going to have to take off the foil and that little metal casing that's often around the cork. And then I put a towel over the cork and just hold my hand on top of the towel, on top of the cork, my right hand, I'm right-handed. And then what I'm going to do with my left hand is slowly twist the bottom of the bottle. And the pressure inside the bottle should help to get it open. So you go very slowly. You point the upper end of the bottle towards the ceiling, mm-hmm. not a light, mm-hmm. away from people. But if you go really slowly and you've got the towel there, it should actually work for you, the pressure. It should help you open the bottle without too much effort.
You'll feel the cork easing out.
Exactly, and it should just come out with a sigh, not actually a pop.
A sigh.
A sigh, you know, just, yeah. Oh, thank goodness, we've opened the champagne.
Okay, well, let's go to the phone lines. Our first caller today is Brian Warshick in Dartmouth. Hi.
Oh, hi. How are you, Natalie?
Hi, Brian. Fine, thanks.
I've really enjoyed, my wife and I have been getting your newsletter for the last couple of years and really have enjoyed it. And now that we have additional wineries here in Nova Scotia, I look forward to reviewing more of them down here.
Absolutely. Thank you.
My question is on a product that we ran into about 8 years ago at Stone Church while I was visiting my parents in St. Catharines, and that is a Bacco Noir, which they've just started growing down here. Can you tell me a little bit about the grape and why is it red wine drinkers always either really like it or don't like it? And then I'll ask for a recommendation.
Sure. Great question. Bacco Noir is a North American hybrid, meaning it's a cross between two different grapes. Pinot Noir is one of them. Cinsault is another. Cinsault is kind of obscure. It creates a very robust red wine, as you've probably discovered. And there are quite a few wineries in the Niagara region growing it. Henry of Pelham is rather famous for their Bacco Noirs. And you're right, Nova Scotia is now planting it. It's a very hardy kind of grape. It can stand our cold winters and yet produce a pretty robust red. And I had a Bacco Noir from Yost recently, and I loved it. I thought it was like plummy and juicy. It's great for, I think, a steak, something like that. So it's probably not got the structure or the long-term aging ability of a Cabernet Sauvignon, but it's a delicious red.
And we have had some from Stone Church and Pelee Island and Henry Pelham. I haven't had any of the Nova Scotia products, but are there any that you would recommend this year that might be available?
From Niagara?
Well, either from Niagara or if the Nova Scotia one, I haven't even seen it here on our shelves yet.
Oh, okay.
But,
well, definitely Yost and Henry of Pelham is up in Niagara. And I'm not sure if Domaine Grand Pré is making a Bacco right now. I haven't had a chance to try it, but they're, you know, another excellent winery in Nova Scotia. From Niagara, you've got a lot of different wineries planting that among their other varietals, their other grapes. So Inniskillen, Jackson Triggs, their different ones are doing that wine. So I'd recommend any of them.
Okay, so they are growing. Well, thank you very
Absolutely.
Much.
Oh, you're welcome, Brian.
Very good. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Our next caller is Vince McLean in East Bay, Nova Scotia. Hello.
Hello, Constance. Natalie, I also get your newsletter and enjoy it very much.
Terrific.
Question with reference to wine corks. Many years ago when I started drinking wine, I don't know how it came about, but basically the wine the waiter would pull the cork, offer you the cork, and at that time you felt it and could smell the cork. Now, I've read in Wine Tidings a while back that you should ignore the basic cork after it's taken from the bottle and just judge the wine from the taste rather than paying any attention to the cork. Mm-hmm. Can you give me an opinion on that?
Yes, absolutely. The cork, what you're looking for when you get the cork out of the bottle is that it isn't dry and crumbly, because if it is, that's a bad sign because it means oxygen could have got into the wine and oxidized it. So basically, if the cork is all in one piece and looking still very moist, that's good. Smelling the cork isn't going to tell you much about the wine at all. So, you know, if the waiter hands you the cork, you can sort of squeeze it and then just put it down on the table. And you're right, you really should smell and taste the wine. That's what's going to tell you if the wine is off or not.
Okay, so they actually by smelling the cork, it really tells you not very much.
Nothing at all, other than you have an interest in corks for some reason.
No interest in corks.
No, okay. Then you can just put it on the table.
Good enough.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Vince.
Bye. Let's move on to Jeanette Mazerol in Halifax. Hi.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question regarding Beaujolais Nouveau. I bought like a half a dozen bottles, and I'm just wondering how quickly do you need to drink Beaujolais Nouveau to enjoy the most of it, and will it go bad after a certain time?
It's a great question, Jeanette. Beaujolais Nouveau, as you know, comes from the French region of Beaujolais, and it's kind of the first wine of the harvest. So they rush those grapes off the vines, press and ferment them, and bottle it and get it out right away, third Thursday in November. And it really is exciting because it gives you sort of a taste of what the harvest will be like for the other grapes that are going to stay longer on the vine or going to stay longer in the bottle and be released later. With Beaujolais Nouveau, because it's made like that, it's meant to be consumed young. So you really don't want to keep it much longer than 6 months. A year is really pushing it. And you've already rolled around to the next Beaujolais Nouveau anyway, so you don't need to keep it longer than a year. But it's not a wine that's made to age for any length of time. It's really best within the first 3 to 6 months.
Now, chemically, why is that?
Because what's happening is they've crushed and fermented the grapes very quickly, so they don't have a lot of tannins in them. It's a very smooth, very fruity young wine. So for anyone who gets tannin headaches or doesn't like a heavy, big red but would like to drink red wine, this is ideal. But because it doesn't have tannins, which is that sort of furry mouth feeling you get from oversteeped tea, it's a natural compound that's in tea and wine. That's not in there. It's not a preservative. That's sort of also what allows the wine to age.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in there at all with Beaujolais, or it's in there in very small amounts, rather, I should say. So it's just not going to hold together as a wine. It's meant to be quaffed early and enjoyed that way.
Okay, thanks for calling in. Our next caller to Maritime Noon is Carlton Lunn in Marion Bridge. Hello.
Yes, good afternoon. A pleasure to be speaking with you, Costas. I have a question for your guest.
Yes?
Natalie, although I'm not receiving your newsletter to date, I may rectify that shortly.
Great.
I have a question to do with sources where one can find what wines marry themselves to what foods. Like that, my greatest appreciation of wines involves just that. I really enjoy them with meals.
Yes.
And certain wines, oh boy, they work so well, and it's really difficult to find, you know, which would marry with which. You know, and when you find the one that works, it heightens the flavors and smells of food and works both ways, actually. The wine seems to improve in both taste and aroma as well.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think when wine and food get together, they can create a whole new taste sensation that is better than the sum of the parts. And wine and food matching questions are the ones I get most often. So there are a couple of great books out there on the market that you can buy. One is by Joanna Simon, and it's called Wine with Food. It was probably published a good 5 to 7 years ago now, but it's a classic. Another one is called Perfect Pairings, which just came out in the spring by a sommelier in the United States. Another great book. By the way, I've listed all these books on my website if you aren't able to jot them down right now. And then a recent book is called What to Eat with What You Drink by two New York writers, another excellent resource. The other thing that I should note, I guess, is that Chapter 7 in my own book, Red, White, and Drunk All Over, is all about a dinner party and matching food and wine. So I kind of treat that subject in the form of a story, an adventure story, and we have fun because it's actually Thanksgiving dinner, turkey dinner, which is kind of relevant again at this time of the year.
Very seasonal.
Yeah, and so we match it with various wines, and we have different courses throughout the dinner and have a lot of fun with that. The last thing I'd add is on my website, I just launched a food and wine matching database. So you can go on my site, it's free, and you can choose a category, let's say appetizer or meat. Then it'll ask you, okay, what type of meat? Turkey. Okay. And then it'll spit back or give you the results of which red and white wines and dessert wines, if applicable, go with that. And then you can search on my site for what wines are available in the stores.
Well, that sounds terrific and great help.
Great.
I'll be sure to check it out, and perhaps Costas can mention your website address.
Well, the there is a link on our homepage right now.
Right.
If you go to the Maritime Noon homepage, just click on that link.
And it's just nataliemclean.com.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That sounds great. Thank you very, very much. Another interesting program.
Thank you.
OK. Okay, bye-bye now.
Just before we move along, Natalie, I mean, we really can't just skip over that last point. What do you recommend with turkey?
Ha-ha. Great question. When we think about turkey dinner, there are a lot of flavors on the table, so it's not just the turkey meat itself, but you've got all of these side dishes with, you know, so many flavors. And a lot of them are sweet. If you think about caramelized carrots and sweet potatoes and creamed corn and so on. And so what I recommend is a very juicy, fruity wine with just a touch of sweetness. And we shouldn't be afraid of sweetness, by the way. A lot of us talk dry, drink sweet. We remember the bad old days, perhaps from the 70s, when sweet wines really were syrupy and not very good tasting. Wines these days that just have a touch of sweetness are really well made and are delicious. But that touch of sweetness is going to mean that they go so well with all the dishes that accompany turkey dinner, plus the turkey itself. Turkey's a really dry meat, especially the way my husband and I cook it, because we're not good cooks. So we always have to compensate for wine, and wine makes up for a lot of cooking sins in our household. So we, if you like a white wine, what I suggest is an off-dry, so that means a touch of sweetness, German Riesling, or the Lacadie Blanc is a very crisp white from Nova Scotia. Domaine de Grand Pré, Yost, and a number of others make it really, really well. To just sort of moisten up that turkey and go with those dishes. If you're a red wine lover, I can't think of a better wine than Pinot Noir. Juicy red wine. Not a lot of those tannins that I was talking about that can dry out your mouth, because you don't want to be doing that when you have dry turkey.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it's just sort of moistening the meat. You can almost think of the wine as yet another flavoring you're going to add to your dinner. And it just marries so well with all of those flavors. But in the end, drink what you like. Really, if you want a big honkin' Shiraz or Cabernet and it doesn't match anything, I mean, who cares in the end, as long as you're happy? Eat some bread in between.
Okay.
Yeah.
Our next caller to Maritime Noon is Olive Roy in Halifax. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I enjoy your program very much.
Good, thank you.
I have a question to ask about wine.
Yes?
Yes. I have a bottle of blueberry wine, and it was made somewhere around Nova Scotia. And I had it for about 25 years, just in the bottom of the cupboard. It's never been opened or anything. Would that be still good to give anyone to drink or anything like that?
Wow, blueberry wine, that's can be as delicious as a pie in the glass. The thing about fruit-based wines that are not made from grapes is that they tend not to age very well. Again, we go back to those structural elements like tannin and other things that you find in grape-based wines that allow it to age. And so, I hate to say it, but I'm not sure about that blueberry wine, if it would still be holding up. So you might want to just, try it yourself, or maybe save it for a display kind of thing, if it's a nostalgic bottle that you've got.
What I wanted to do was actually give it to someone. Yeah.
Okay.
And I was just wondering, I wouldn't want to give it to them, and then they'd come back and throw it at me and say it was no good, you know.
Right, exactly. Well, I just have my doubts, rather serious doubts, that it might still be okay. I'm not sure that blueberry wine can age 25 years.
Well, I was told, I don't know if this is true or not, that one time people used to make blueberry wine that lived in the country, and after they made it, they would put it in some kind of a thing you turn the tap on, and it would come up. But sometimes after it was made for a while, it would have like a white head onto it, like.
Oh, wow.
Like a mildew or something.
Ugh, that doesn't sound good.
So that, I was wondering, that would, if it had anything like that on, that would be poison, wouldn't it?
Yeah, although the alcohol in it will keep it sanitary. I just don't think it might taste very good.
No.
Yeah.
No, this was never opened.
Okay.
I tell you the truth, I had bought it about 25 years ago, and I was going to give it to someone, and I just never did. I put it away, and I just forgot where I put it.
Yeah.
You see?
I've done that, too. I've forgotten about bottles.
Yeah, I just put it away. It was just a casual thing, you know?
Yeah.
Well, thank you for calling today.
Yes.
Bye now.
Bye.
Okay, then. Thank you very much.
Bye.
I enjoy your program very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Our next caller to Maritime Noon is Bill McCormick in Lower Sackville, Nova Scotia. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, your question.
I explained when I got on, it's not a question. I want to take issue with the very chicken-livered suggestions about how to open a champagne or a sparkling wine bottle, and I think I can offer a more enjoyable version. What I do is go out on a deck or a porch, and I get the foil and wire off, and you give it a little twist to get the process started. Then very, very gingerly, with each thumb, push each side, and the cork eases up millimeter by millimeter till finally the pressure takes off. And then you point it at 45 degrees and measure how far the cork goes. I experienced the cheapo under in or around $10 sparklings don't go very far, and whereas a real champagne or those excellent Californian lookalikes made even by people like Bums will go considerably further. And finally, although cork is biodegradable, but nonetheless, my field-trained English Springer Spaniel retrieves the corks.
That's great.
That's more fun, because I can then report back to the guests whether I'm giving them rotten stuff because it only went 20 yards, or good stuff because it went 30.
It's an excellent way to measure the quality of the wine.
There's probably a page in there in the Guinness World Book of Records or something, yeah. You know, the greatest distance covered by a cork.
Since I've just finished having a glass of Guinness with my lunch, that's appropriate.
That's
Thank
great.
You for calling.
Thank you, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Our next caller is Joseph Ravel in Charlottetown. Hi.
Hi there. How are you?
Great.
Good. I enjoy your newsletter very much, Natalie.
Thanks, Joseph.
I'd like to get your thoughts on the wines of Argentina, which, unfortunately, we don't have a very good selection here in the Maritime Provinces. So I'm particularly interested in what you think of their whites, the Pinot Gris, and whatever.
Okay. Well, I actually do think that Argentina is the next hot new thing. If we think about Australian Shiraz, kind of the number one red wine in Canada, I think what's up and coming is Argentinian Malbec, a red wine. But I also think that the Pinot Grigio that you were mentioned is a great white wine. But that region, Argentina is undervalued right now, so the wines are very cheap in terms of their quality. They're trying to establish themselves in North America. You're right, we don't get a lot either in the Maritimes or across Canada, for that matter. So I'm a big fan. I think we're going to see more and more of those wines. They're just delicious.
I wonder what it's going to take to convince either our wine drinkers or our liquor commissions to maybe lead the way a little bit in this respect.
I think, as a wine writer, I certainly recommend these wines when I get to taste them. And as a wine drinker, if you keep buying them, if you like them, I think we vote with our dollars. Mm-hmm. And so if they see that they're hot sellers, the few that are on the shelves, maybe they'll stock up more.
But there's a push and a pull there. What about countries such as Australia, who seem to have been very aggressive in you know, marketing their wines to the whole world?
Absolutely, yeah. So maybe Argentina could take some marketing lessons from Australia. Certainly, the Australians have been phenomenal at their marketing. They've really turned wine into liquid food and made it accessible and approachable, you know, from all the little furry critters on the label to the fact that a lot of them do use screw caps, which is a great thing for wine, by the way, makes it more accessible, to just simplifying what wine's all about. So all you have to remember is, I like Australia. You don't have to remember 467 subregions as you do in France. They tell you what's in the bottle. They'll say, this is Shiraz. Whereas if you look at a Bordeaux, often you have to know that a Bordeaux is Cabernet Sauvignon, or a blend, rather. So, you know, you're right, Costas. I mean, I think the Argentinians could probably take a lesson or two from the Australians.
Okay.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. You're listening to Maritime Noon. I'm Costas Halavrezos. My guest today is Natalie McLean, author of Red, White, and Drunk All Over. She also writes a free online newsletter entitled Nat Decants for anyone interested in wine, and there is a link on the Maritime Noon homepage. But if you have a question about choosing or serving or enjoying wine, call now. Natalie would be happy to answer your questions. 1-800-565-1940, toll free, 1-800-565-1940, and in the Halifax area, 420-9336. We'll return to your calls after this news update with Dan Page. Dan. Thank you very much, Dan. Back to the phone lines on Maritime Noon. Our next caller is Carmichael Wallace in Halifax. Hello.
Hello, Costas.
Hello.
And hi, Natalie.
Carmichael, how are you?
Nice to speak to you, and thanks again for coming to visit us not long ago.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
I just wanted to make a comment first before my question about your response to the previous caller. I think you're absolutely right on with, you know, looking out for wines for less than classic, non-classic varietals from the less known wine producing regions to get the best value. And I'd put a plug in for Portugal particularly as well in that context. They're really up and coming. A lot of their wines are subsidized by the EU, which is to our benefit, and they have a lot of interesting wine varietals.
They do. Portugal and Spain, there are some regions there that are revitalizing. They're not what they used to be. And it's a great point, because we should look at those regions again for how they've really energized their wine industries.
Yeah. Anyway, my question is relates to, you know, what would you recommend to the listeners as for wine related Christmas gifts for the new wine enthusiast?
Ah, well, you mean other than my book, of course.
Well, certainly books, your book, and well, of course, if you were to mention joining a membership of a wine society.
Oh, gee, yes. How about the Opinion Society, Carmichael?
Well, exactly. And anyone joining up now, of course, is going to get a free copy of your book.
Right. No, Carmichael is Costas associated or runs the Opinion Society, which is actually an excellent wine tasting club across the country. But there's a chapter in Halifax. And they buy wines, they hold events. That's how I met Carmichael. I was speaking at one of them, and it's a great club to join if you really want to meet your fellow enthusiasts and get recommendations on wine. So that would be an excellent Christmas gift. There's so many new gadgets too out on the market these days. I've noticed some really nifty little things. There's some beads from Riedel, who makes the wine glasses, and they'll clean your decanter. You know, sometimes it's really hard to clean a decanter, those last drips in the bottle, and you can't get any sort of brush down there. You can put these beads in, leave them for a while, and then you put some water on top of them, dump it out, and it's totally clean. I thought that was a really good innovation. Riedel glasses themselves are a great gift. I'm a big believer in using a good glass for wine. It doesn't have to be expensive, but it has to be big enough so that you can actually swirl the wine a bit without sloshing it on your shirt and smell the aromas, because wine's character is in the aromas. So I always recommend, if you want to get a really nice gift for someone, a set of two, even four glasses is a lovely idea.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and certainly education struck me as being a good idea for somebody who's just getting into it. And of course, as you say, you can do this through independent study, just buying the books and reading away, which is certainly the way I got my education. And besides your book, Natalie, one that I'd particularly recommend would be the new edition of the World Atlas of Wine.
Oh, yes, Jancis Robinson's third edition, the Oxford Companion.
I mean, Hugh Johnson first produced this, the World Atlas.
Oh, yes.
Back in the 70s. And,
right.
But you're right. The new edition is co-edited by Jancis Robinson, who we both believe is a great wine writer. And
absolutely.
It'd be a terrific present for anyone for Christmas. And also there are wine courses available in Nova Scotia, but I think run by the Nova Scotia Sommeliers Association, which I'm not associated with, but so can't give you details on that.
Well, I've posted the links to their site on mine.
Oh,
so,
great.
Yeah.
Well, that would do the trick, wouldn't it, for anyone there?
As well as the Opinion.
Okay, right. Yeah. The link is there, so they can, people could get in touch with me directly at my Opinion address. I don't know if you've got that on your website.
I've got the opim.ca link, yes.
Okay, but if you had the Opinion at ns.simpatico.ca link, then people could contact me for more information.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for calling in today.
Okay.
Thanks,
Carmichael. Thank
you. Nice to talk to you. Bye-bye.
Our next caller is Larry Dunn in Sydney. Hello.
Hello, Constance. How are you?
Very well. Your question.
Hi, Natalie. How are you doing?
Fine, thanks, Larry. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Cool.
I'm a subscriber to your newsletter, and I enjoy it very much. In particular, I like your wine picks. One problem I have is that most of the picks aren't available in the local market here.
Yeah.
Just wondering, is there any way that you can include some of the wines that are available here in Cape Breton in some of your picks, or could you recommend any?
Yeah, I do try when I get home, which is usually 3 to 4 times a year. I do try to taste as many local wines as I can, and as I said earlier in the show, I'm really impressed, especially with the Austin Domaine de Grand Pré. But what stock differs everywhere. Every province has this issue. No two provinces are exactly the same. And so 4 times a year, and, well, tomorrow, Friday, in my newsletter, I'll be sending out what I call my good value picks. And those are wines that are usually cheaper in the, you know, $8 to $15 range. They're more widely available than the rest of the picks I do the rest of the year, and you should have better luck with those. The other thing you can do, what I suggest to anybody living anywhere, is get to know somebody at your local liquor store whom you trust, who, you know, is knowledgeable, and work with that person, because they can sometimes bring in a case of your favorite wine. It's one way to do it that can simplify your buying life too, is or just print out the picks that you're interested in and say, can you bring any, are you getting any of these, or can you bring me in a case of any of these? That's how a lot of people do it from the newsletter when the stock doesn't match up exactly.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
I'll give that a try then.
Okay. Good luck.
Okay, thank you very much, Natalie.
Thanks, Larry.
That toll-free number is 1-800-565-1940 in the Halifax area, 420-9336. Our next caller is David Anderson in Rothsay, New Brunswick. Hello.
Hi, Costas. How are you doing?
Very well.
Costas, I have a quick question for Natalie. I have a bottle of Reims G.H. Mum Cordon Rouge Champagne from 1948 or older. It was given to my parents Christmas Eve 1948, and it's always been stored on its side. Yeah. I don't imagine it's any good, because I don't think champagne ages very well. Evaporation has taken place down into the shoulder. There's probably 3-inch airspace there now.
Okay.
But I was curious for a couple of things. One, is there any way of establishing the actual date of the wine? There's 2 or 3 numbers on the bottle.
Okay.
I know it was 1948 because my dad had written 1948 right on the bottle, on the label itself.
Okay.
But there is a 456 on it, and there's a 3378 on it as well.
That's a great question. When there's no vintage date on a champagne, it is non-vintage, literally. And what that means is, in Champagne, they're famous for their non-vintage wines, meaning they blend from multiple years. So even if you knew when it was bought, it's a non-vintage.
So it's 1948 or older.
Well, yeah, it's probably multiple years. It's a blend.
Right, right.
And they're actually, those are the wines they're famous for, and really produce the house signature of the Champagne makers. They're proudest, actually, of their non-vintage wines. That said, there's two factors. Champagne actually does age well. What happens, though, is that it takes on nutty sort of aromas and darkens, darker yellow, and it depends if you like that style of wine. The only thing I'd say is that because you've got a 3-inch gap, it could well be oxidized, because that's
right.
A lot of airspace at the top. Yeah.
Now, it's been stored on its side as long as I know.
It'd be worth trying, though, this new year. Like, chill it and see what's happening.
My parents always said, well, we'll save it for a special occasion. Went through several children, several grandchildren.
All right.
A few deaths, including theirs. I was going to put it in the casket with my mom several years ago.
My goodness. You never know when that cork could blow, though.
True. Anyway, I think I'll just leave it.
Yeah, true.
Conversation piece.
Yeah, that's probably better served that way.
Right. Thanks very much.
Okay.
All right.
Bye. Let's move along to Valerie Holloman in Dartmouth. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Like an earlier caller, I too have discovered Baco Noir and quite enjoy it. And she's right, I'm a Cabernet Sauvignon drinker normally, and I guess I'm one of the ones that does like to switch to Baco Noir. The other gentleman, as I recall, was wondering if he could get it here in Nova Scotia, and you mentioned the Yost Winery. Where I've gotten it from is a small winery just outside Port Williams. It used to be the Habitant Winery, but I think it's called Blomidon Estates now.
Right, you're
right.
It's
a little small one just on the way to Stars Point and Prescott House and through there.
Yeah, I've been there. They do a great Bacco.
Yeah, I really, really enjoy that. Anyway, I just thought, you know, it's another place that this fellow, if you're in Halifax, it's a little closer to get to maybe than up to Malagash for Yost. I know Yost you can get in the stores, and I don't think you can get this Blomidon Estates one actually in the liquor store.
It's a great suggestion. Worth the trip and buy a case.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Just thought I'd bring that up because it's a nice little wine.
Okay.
Great. Okay, great.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks. Let's move along to Bill Van Gorder in Halifax. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Hi, Natalie.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Good.
Good.
Good. Sorry I'm late joining the show today. I'm sure people have said that both your newsletter and the new book are terrific.
Oh, thanks, Bill.
Highly recommend. I've been putting away red wines for some time of different varieties, and now I'm running into the question, how do you know when you should finally drink them?
Great question. The eternal question. You can get a pocket vintage guide. So those are those skinny little books that Hugh Johnson, Oz Clark, and a few others publish, fit into a pocket. And I think that's your best reference to knowing when to drink something, because you just look up the wine. They've got pretty much all the wines from all the regions there, and it shows you when those wines will peak and the best years to drink them if you have those long-term aging wines. Online, there are a few vintage charts. Again, I've got links on my site to vintage charts, and it'll tell you by region. Now, it doesn't get down to the specifics of this wine from this region we'll be drinking in this year. It'll just say, you know, in the Piedmont region of Italy, 94 was a good year, drink now, 95 wasn't so good, and so on. So I do recommend those pocket vintage guides as a way of sort of managing your cellar and knowing when to get the most enjoyment from your wine.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks, Bill.
Good. Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye-bye. Our next caller to Maritime Noon is Octavio Ribeiro in St. John. Hi.
Hello, Costas. You know, we know each other.
Yes. Long time no here.
I want to say something a little later to you. But first of all, Natalie, I wonder if you could recommend a wine that has, I think it's called Reservatrol or Reversatrol. I can't quite. But I read somewhere that wines from Oregon had a very high percentage of this.
Yes.
It's supposed to be very good for you. And I was wondering whether you could recommend any medium-priced wines that, you know, that are readily available in this area, which have is it Reversatrol or Reservatrol?
Yes, I think it's Resveratrol. So Resveratrol, I know it's a tongue tripper. And it's actually an antioxidant that is found mostly in red wines, but especially red wines from cool climates like Oregon, like Nova Scotia and Niagara.
Oh.
Absolutely. And so, and especially when you think about Pinot Noir from a cool climate, has lots of resveratrol, because what resveratrol is the grape fighting off disease, its own diseases, fungus, and so on. And so that's that compound that the grape has that is trying to preserve its own life is an antioxidant in the wine and helps us, of course, in moderation.
Any names, any brand names?
Well, any of the Pinot Noirs you can find on the shelf, especially from those cool climates. Mm-hmm. They're gonna be loaded with resveratrol, fortunately, I've got lots of pics on my site. But really, I wouldn't say this particular wine has more resveratrol than others, other than to stick with Pinot Noir, cool climate.
Okay,
and you'll be.
I just want to ask you something else. I don't know if I understood you correctly, that champagne you can keep forever. Is that right?
Forever may not be.
I don't know, but somebody gave me, I don't know how good this is, but somebody gave me a bottle about 15 years ago, and it's been under the sink. And and when I went to the liquor store, they said, oh, you know, that's no good. You can't drink it any longer.
Oh.
I don't know. It's called Tots. I've never heard of it before.
Tots.
And it's a champagne from California. Is it any good?
You know what? I don't think 15 years is too long. Can't guarantee you, but I'd give it a try. But don't wait. This New Year's would be good.
Anyway, may I just, if you'll excuse me, just say one little thing to Costas?
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
Costas,
yes.
I went to your home.
Oh, yes.
I used to live in St. John in
yes.
June. And I think it's up for sale again. It's a very interesting home. I have to return to St. John.
Thank you for that.
Anyway, thank you very much.
I'm one of the, I am probably the least distinguished student ever to take an art course from Mr. Ribeiro at St. John many, many years ago.
That's great.
Anyway, it sounds we have a pattern emerging here. You know, people not only hoard pennies in their homes, apparently in the Maritimes we hoard champagne.
Yeah, drink it.
Our next caller is Gary Jenner in Port Williams. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Very well.
Good. The question I have is on commercially prepared wines that are shipped into North America from overseas like Australia, France, Italy, and so on. I know people that are very leery about drinking them because of the possibility of damage to the wine on containers by hot or cold. I wonder if you have any thoughts on that, Natalie.
Good question, Gary. These days, most wines are shipped in refrigeration units that are temperature controlled for wine, because they know that if the wine cooks on the dock or wherever along the way, consumers these days are just going to return it. So it's not a good investment for anybody. So these days it's fairly stabilized in terms of the temperature and humidity in terms of the way they ship. I wouldn't worry about it.
Pretty safe then.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye.
Great. Bye now.
That toll-free number, 1-800-565-1940, 1-800-565-1940, and in the Halifax area, dial 420-9336. In case you're just joining us, my guest in this hour is Natalie McLean, the author of Red, White, and Drunk All Over. She also writes a free online news letter entitled Nat Decants, and there is a link on the Maritime Noon homepage for that. But right now, back to the phone lines. Our next caller is Dwight Johnson in Berwick, Nova Scotia. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
I just got a quick question for Natalie. Natalie, I prefer myself, I like the deep, fruity wines of Australia. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I've got to like those so much, but I do. Mm-hmm. But I guess my question to you, being a good Nova Scotia boy, I do like to support the wineries in Nova Scotia as best I can. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering what wine might be close to a heavy-bodied Australian, because I've not run across any Nova Scotia wine that have the body or the flavor of the Australian wine, and maybe right. There is no such thing.
That's a good question. I think that those Baco Noirs we were talking about will be the closest to your Australian Shiraz. They're pretty full-bodied, by the way.
Are they?
Yes. The thing about Nova Scotia is it excels in crisp whites because the climate is so cool. It's great for those really crisp, refreshing whites. It's harder to do full-bodied reds to the extent that Australia does them because we don't get enough heat. Australia, many regions are very hot, and so they ripen those red grapes enough to make those full-bodied wines with the deep, plummy, berry character that you like. So try one of those Baco Noirs we were talking about earlier. I think you'll be pretty impressed.
Yeah. What kind is that again?
Baco Noir is the grape, just like Shiraz is the grape for Australia. But try Baco Noir from Youst, Domaine Grand Pré, and we were also talking recently about Blomenon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. And I do love the Nova Scotia white wine.
Mm-hmm.
As you say, they are delicious. They're crisp and they're yummy.
Yes.
But anyway, I want to thank you very much for your help.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah,
bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Our next caller to Maritime Noon is Kit Childs in Bedford, Nova Scotia. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello. Costas, you and I had lunch in Sunnyside about 10 or 15 years ago.
Yes. You were a grape grower.
And I told you I wanted to make the best red possible. Well, still working on that. Picked up a few gold medals.
Good. Congratulations.
Thank you. Natalie, I've slipped off your list, but I was on your mailing list. I think I changed my address.
Okay.
My comment is about Christmas wines. I liked what you suggested, a sweet white.
Okay.
And I was just going to add two further suggestions, perhaps a Gewürz from Alsace.
Mm.
I think it would go well with the turkey. And the other one might be a Vouvray or something like that, a sweetie from the Loire Valley.
Those are great suggestions.
I'm not sure about the second one as availability here, but certainly you can get a Gewürz.
Yes, and they're so aromatic. I mean, you know, they're so strongly perfumed that they're going to go well and not get overwhelmed with all those strong flavors on the Christmas dinner table.
Yeah, I think those would do well.
Yeah.
In fact, you've changed my direction. That's what we're going to do.
Okay.
A comment about a full-bodied Nova Scotia Red. Don't forget the Grand Prairie Reserve Foch, which is pretty full-bodied.
Oh, right,
a little
right.
bit higher up the price ladder, but a beautiful wine.
But still, no, it's terrific. You're right.
Thank you. Enjoying the program very much. Keep it going.
Great. Thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
Our next caller is Craig Flynn in Halifax. Hello.
Hey, Constance. How are you?
Great.
Good. Nat, long
Hi.
Time no talk. How are you?
Fine, Craig. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Great.
I wanted to call because I'm here at the restaurant and we're doing a Canadian cheese plate for sort of a different type of winter dessert. We've been trying over the years to put cheese plates on, and for some reason it doesn't seem to click with some of the local diners. Now, we certainly sell some, but it's chocolate and caramel seems to be the big sellers all the time. So what I wanted to try to do was pair a very nice port and with this and sort of sell it as a combination. And I have very limited experience in understanding ports. And I thought you might be able to let me or put me in a good direction on that.
Absolutely. And may I just add, for anyone who may not know Craig, but he is the chef at Chives Bistro. And it's one of my favorite restaurants in Halifax. I just think he does a great job with his cooking.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Port and cheese are natural partners. One of the classics is port and Stilton, the blue cheese Stilton. If we think of Canadian cheeses, we're famous for our cheddars, so I can imagine you're going to have a lot of hard cheeses on that Canadian cheese plate.
Yeah, I can actually, sorry to interrupt you now,
sure,
but I can
sure.
just tell you that what we're running with, like I'm trying to do a little bit of a broad span. So I'm starting with, I've got three types of Quebec. I've got Benedictine blue.
Oh, great.
I've got a Port Salut. And we have a Warwick Brie. I think it's a Brie, but it's definitely a softer cheese. And then we have the 5-year white Canadian cheddar. So that's the four that I'm starting with. And it's being served with a poached pear. I'm really plugging this dish right now, aren't I?
Yeah, you're making me hungry, actually. You're making everybody hungry.
Yeah, so we're doing a poached pear. And we're actually poaching that in Saint-Fémy Red Marechal Foch. So that's sort of a little bit of a Nova Scotia tie as well.
That's great.
And some roasted nuts. So that's the plate.
Okay. Well, you know, it's just a perfect setup for port. You can either go vintage port, which is got a date on it, a vintage port, and has sort of a more plummy kind of character, a deeper sort of winey, plummy character. Or you can go for a tawny port, which is usually labeled as 10-year, 20-year, 30-year, and so on, and has more of a caramel, almondy, nutty, sweet, they're both sweet, character. The thing about port and cheese and why they're such perfect partners is that port has the strength of flavor and alcohol to meet cheese. So what happens is the higher alcohol, so it's around 16 to anywhere up to like 22-23% alcohol, emulsifies, literally liquefies the cheese and spreads it across your palate in just a gorgeous way, the way texture and flavor. And also what you're getting in port are a lot of complementary flavors. You mentioned you were going to put some nuts with those cheeses. That's a natural flavor pairing, but you'll also get that nutty character in the port itself. So all those flavors are marrying nicely together. So you can go vintage port or tawny port, and there's some great brands, and they're widely available. You can look for Graham's, Dow's, Taylor Fladgate. Those are some of my favorites.
Taylor Fladgate right okay. now. That's one of the ones. I wanted to add something a little bit different, but Graham's and what was the second?
Graham's, Dow's, D-O-W apostrophe S. You won't go wrong with any of the big producers of port, vintage or tawny. It might be interesting to experiment with both. I almost think the tawny would go better with the brie, but the two of them will go really well with all the hard cheeses.
Okay.
That's fantastic.
Okay,
well, thanks
Craig.
For calling.
I'll work with that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Bye now. Our next caller is Martin Ruiz in Lunenburg. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Great.
It was kind of ironic that I'm calling. I'm also a chef and a friend of Craig's, and my question is also about port.
Okay.
My wife and I are going to Portugal in January, and we're heading to Porto. And besides that, we're kind of curious to ask you, What wine should we be on the outlook for? You know, something a little bit different than what we usually would see in our Nova Scotia liquor commission.
In Portugal?
Yes.
I haven't actually visited Portugal. It's on the top of my list, but I've heard that visiting the port houses themselves is just a spectacular tour. They're all along the water because it was the British merchants traditionally. I mean, you think of the names of these port houses, Dow's, Taylor, Fladgate, and so on, Graham's. Those aren't Portuguese names, they're British names. And so they had these great big, beautiful old houses that were the shipping centers for their port. At the turn of the century. So you must take a tour through those port houses. And then beyond that, Portugal, as we sort of spoke about earlier in the show, is one of those old world countries that has revitalized itself. So I'd look for the new Portuguese style of dry red table wine. So there's all kinds of brand names that you can look for, like Perquita and so on. But I mean, you'll have so many choices when you're over there. But experiment with the new red dry Portuguese wines. I think that'd be worth trying.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye bye.
Bon voyage. And we have time for a quick call from Augusta Halliday in Kentville. Hello.
Hi there.
Yes.
Yeah. What? Question is there more tannin in white wine than red, or vice versa?
Ah, great question. Tannins are more present in red wine because the way red wine is fermented is the skins are left on the grapes. That's what gives it its color, but that's also what gives it more tannin. The tannins are in the grapes. They're also in the seeds and the stems, but generally those get siphoned out. But so you'll get far more tannin in red.
Okay. Thank you for calling. And that is all the time we have for calls. Natalie, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Costas. This was a lot of fun.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Natalie McLean is the author of Red, White, and Drunk All Over. She also writes a free online newsletter entitled Nat Decants for anyone interested in wine. And there is a link on the Maritime Noon homepage. And a reminder that we post all our phone-ins on our website for 1 week. So just go to cbc.ca/Maritime Noon. That's cbc.ca/Maritime Noon. Coming up tomorrow on the phone-in, why do so many people have trouble with math, and what can we do about it? I'm Costas Halvrezos. Have a great afternoon.